This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. On today's Breakfast Grill, we are in conversation with YB Teo Ni Ching. She's the former Deputy Minister of Education, and Conrad Fernandez, Executive Director of DBED, as we deep dive on the latest policy challenges, changes that will impact our education system. You know, Ni Ching, Conrad, we have so many things to cover in relation to the education system, from SPM to school dropouts to infrastructure, DLP, HIP, teacher shortages. The list could go on. I think if we were allowed to, this could last till midnight. So because of our precious time, let's just focus on 3 to 4 very specific developments that have been recently announced that could have a profound impact on our education system. And let's start with PT3 school exam abolishment. Ni Ching, is this a step in the right direction?
I think in terms of policy and principle, I do think that this is in the right directions. But of course, the question here is always like whether this is the right timing. School-based assessment actually implemented since 2011. But perhaps if you got kids in school at that period of time, many parents still not aware or won't understand what was actually school-based assessment. Today is an alien concept, even though after implementing for many, many years. So when PH, Pakatan Harapan, was the government, we actually abolished the school unified exam for standard 1 to 3. However, before we do that, we conducted a survey, and the survey actually shows that 50% of the parents support the abolishment of unified exam for standard 1 to 3, but however, another 50% who disagree. Same for teachers, 50% agree with the abolishment, but 50% also disagree. But however, that's why we make the decision that we want to move away from exam-oriented education system. We want to have a more holistic approach. But we cannot do it too rush, because you can see that parents are not ready. Half the parents are not supportive, and then half of the teachers, they are also not supportive. And therefore, we made the decision to actually start from the school unified exam for standard 1 to 3, because the survey that we conducted in August 2018 also shows that 88% of the teachers actually are exposed to training. They are trained for school-based assessment. And only about 5% said they didn't know anything about school-based assessment at all. And therefore, we think we can start with standard 1 to 3. Later on, we know that MOE actually abolished UPSR, and now they are abolishing PT3. I think for many parents and also teachers, the concern here is we do so after 2 years of COVID-19 pandemic. In these 2 years COVID-19 pandemic, school closed for a very long time. We use a lot of online education and also home-based education. So in these 2 years, how do we assess the learning of the students and whether the gap actually has been widened between rural and urban areas? I think this is the main concern.
I mean, you're saying two very interesting things, right? Firstly, when you first started off, you said it was a very divisive issue, that actually it's not a unanimous decision, right, between the parents and teachers. And then you're also talking a bit about the preparedness, that the infrastructure is not ready, as well as the timing to when you implement this is really called to question. So I want to bring Conrad into the discussion here, because this whole question about whether examinations are a fair way of testing our knowledge, whether it has to be done at an institutional, broader national level or at a school-based level, right, has been a decade-long discussion. What is LeapEd's perspective? What does the science say?
Actually, just to take a step back, Philip, you know, when the announcement was made early in June, it was a surprise to us, right? And there were more questions that was coming up than anything else, actually. Like, why do you announce it in mid-year of the calendar, right? Was there any engagements done with the stakeholders? Everyone seemed to be taken surprised by this, the task to implement this new approach. And the question now basically sits on, when we want to do school-based assessments, do we have the right conditions and competencies to ensure that authentic school-based assessment can be done? Now, it would be interesting if there was data shown for the school-based assessment that has commenced for the past 10 years. And it would have good, even better, if the minister did share the rationale of why he was migrating to abolishing PT3. So for us, abolishing PT3 means SPM as a single national exam. It's okay, fine. That's one start point, right? Seeing a school-based assessment as a policy for us, it's okay also. It's pretty good. But basically trying to decentralize the national level standardized assessment to 400,000 teachers being individual assessors. Yeah. Now, that is a big question, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're pulling out so many red alerts, which is how we implement this. How ready are we? Because if I hear you correctly, look, PD3 is actually quite critical because it's a decision on when you stream into arts and science as well. But you point to the fact that there is really no evidence of preparedness on the ground, especially after coming out from the pandemic after 2 years. So, Nee-Ching, when you talk to teachers in your schools, in your constituencies, right, across the country, right, how prepared are they?
I think majority of the teachers, at least to the person that I spoke to and the parents, they did not receive the announcement well because, again, like what you mentioned just now, that is after 2 years of pandemic when I think we are still struggling to know what type of, whether the education gap has been widened. And for this, actually, MOE has never addressed the issue because right during the parliament session or during all this period, I think a lot of like academics and also researchers and of course MPs has been calling for MOE to actually conduct a research to find out or to at least address the issue of education gap. We need to know whether education gap has been widened. But this is not, this issue has never been addressed. So for us to implement, to abolish the PT3 now, of course, the biggest concern would be when we leave the assessment of performance of each student to individual teachers, how objective it would be and whether it would be conclusive enough. It would actually help us to understand the education gap situation after 2 years of COVID-19 pandemic. Because we need to know education gap between urban candidates and also rural candidates is always there. It's always there.
Yeah.
But whether what we are doing now is actually addressing the problem, actually we are hiding more issue under the carpet.
This is a question about intervention. And this is where what I hope the goal for this whole decentralization when to do school-based assessments is so that you could really put in place targeted interventions down at the school level. But that comes to the point about having resources in place, having the teachers capable to do that. You know, Conrad, what are the ingredients? What is necessary to make this work and successful, right?
First, our teachers are really burdened with processes rather than doing actual work. Processes like reporting, to a point that they're taking their time away from actually spending time trying to give good, proper lessons in class. Number two, in terms of how we prepare the teachers, I think putting the burden now is transferred to teachers. The core focus now is how do we prepare the schools, the teachers to be really clear-cut in trying to deliver impactful lessons plus assessing them. For us, what we do is when we start at the very top from the school level itself, when we design an annual school plan, that school plan is co-developed by the whole school, meaning the leadership, the teachers, and the parents and community, right? And when we identify that, we also identify what are the teachers' competencies that need to be developed for the reasons of to achieve the annual plan. So for me, so I'm saying is that in doing so, we develop the right competencies. So if you want to say school-based assessment is a core ingredient for the year and moving forward, that will be part of how we build the capacity of the teacher in the school so that they are gradually equipped to do it. All teachers in the school, I'm not talking about selective group, all teachers will be upskilled so that they know how to deliver effectively. That is how we look at it from a trust school, meaning to say it starts from the whole level, school plan, cascaded down.
I think this is where we talk about putting in the resources and having accountability at the school level, then comes to the question about how you assess a school and how do you prepare the school. And I think that's why there's been so much controversy with the recent SPM results, where it's now become clear that to a certain extent, examination results for SPM has become a key criteria for school assessment. Nee-Ching, do you understand the logic behind that?
I think it's the mentality of the parents and also the teachers. That's why it's important for us to do away from exam-oriented education system. Parents want to send their children to school that can actually produce good result students. So when I was in MOE, there are parents who come to us who say they don't mind to send their children to a school that is perhaps 15 km away, 20 km away, but it's a better school because it produces like 9 A students, 8 A students. So this is the common mentality for the parents and also for the school administration. I think to a certain extent, I cannot deny that. I think some of the headmaster of the school, even for the teachers, they still very focused on the academic achievement of their schools. And therefore, I think that's why we need to move away from exam-oriented education system and adopt a more holistic approach so that we can focus on other development of the students as well.
How do we shift that culture, right, from being exam-centric to learning-centric? You know, Conrad, what is your experience on the ground? What can we do there?
our approach in our TRASCO program has never been about academic performance. It's never about getting the school to have straight A students. That has never been the aim and goal of the program that we do. It's called the TRASCO program. The aim of the TRASCO program is about developing holistic children. Holistic children meaning to say they are able to think critically, be able to communicate effectively, being able to work collaboratively, being able to converse effectively and bilingually. These are the kind of aspirations in the Ministry of Education blueprint, but that's what we've been doing since 2010, we started the program. So everything that we do there is more student-centered kind of approach in the classroom. If by chance the academic improves, well and good, because we are improving the pedagogy side of the teachers, trying to improve the quality in teaching. But more importantly, what we focus on is, are the children being given exposure and experience to have a fun and loving environment in learning? And in doing so, they get to, they're not book smart, so to say. They're more street smart. That's what's more important. And that's the whole reason why the program was initiated. We don't want future citizens which are just so book smart, you know, they can answer everything within the textbook, but beyond that, they can't.
But you're an exception in the public sector system, because if I think about, you know, in Klang Valley, I hear this whole holistic approach very much focused a lot in the private sector. A lot of private schools are beginning to embrace it, but you don't see that so much in government schools. Is that fair, Ni Ching? That it's really taking place for those who can afford it, for those who have the capacity and resources, but not for everybody.
I think we are in a dilemma. That's why actually school-based assessment was introduced in the year 2011. The purpose of it is actually to move away from exam-oriented, and therefore we can spend more time to make sure that we assess the students from their various performance, their leadership, their communication, right, etc., their collaboration. All these are the very important skills. But all these skills, it's not tested in the exam. It's not tested in the national exam. It's not tested in the unified exam. And we have this very strange situation whereby when your SPN result, actually you announce a result, all the schools will start publishing statistics, or the newspaper will covering these diagnoses, yeah, like, are this school produced like 3 10A students or 10 9A students, etc. But actually MOE has already banned the school from doing so. But however, the media, the society, they do not change the attitude. They are still looking for this type of news, and we celebrate the students' achievement according to their academic result, and we are not paying sufficient that aspect of their achievement. And that's the reality we need to deal with. So I would say that within the MOE, within the government school system, there is this intention and agenda to actually move away from exam-oriented. But whether this is the consensus among 400,000 teachers and also among all the headmasters, at the same time, you need to deal with the society. You need to communicate with the society so that we do not overly focus on the academic achievement of the students, but also we will be able to assess them in a more holistic approach, wholesome approach, whereby their communication, their collaboration, their critical thinking, all these are important factors for them to become successful in the future. I think during this period, we see a lot of news like this school got 10A students, that school got 9A students, but a lot of people are also sharing stories that they don't remember how many A's they achieved during SPM, but it doesn't stop them from becoming successful or having a happy life now. I don't get 9 A's or 10 A's in my SPM.
Neither did I. Far from it.
I'm definitely not the top student. But I think what we are doing now are equally meaningful,
yes,
and also important. And therefore, I think this type of engagement need to happen. It's not within MOE, there is this intention to do so. But whether we are putting out sufficient effort to make sure the school are following this direction, especially the headmaster and the teachers, and at the same time, the parents, the society, they are also knowing that it's time for us to move away from exam-oriented and don't assess a school achievement merely by their how many A's they can produce during the national exam. I think that is very, very important.
Can I just add in? I think so. The other thing, you want to move to school-based assessment also, right? There's also this question of, you know, in the classroom, some classrooms are having about 40 children in the classroom. That is a huge number of children for a teacher to basically try to do what she has to do, he or she has to do. In comparison to private schools, which are having about 25 students, the ratio is so different. And therefore, you know, the focus and time that the teacher can give to each child is totally different. So that's the classroom size is a big concern and a challenge that we have to really try to address.
I mean, it goes to show number of A's doesn't really dictate your happiness and success. On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with YB Teo Ni Ching, former Deputy Minister of Education, and Conrad Fernandez, Executive Director of LEAP. After the break, we discuss the dual language program and teacher shortages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back on the Breakfast Grill. I'm in panel conversation with YB Teo Nee Ching, former Deputy Minister of Education, and Conrad Fernandez, Executive Director of LEEPED, to get their perspective on the recent policy decisions made by the Minister of Education. Now, in the first half, we talked about exams. But now we pass our eyes to the future and refer to DLP, the Dual Language Program. This is the classes where students learn science and maths in English. Right? Many say this year is the year when the rubber hits the road. The question is, are we ready?
If you ask me from a parent perspective, I think DLP is a very good initiative for me. Personally, I feel that the children need to learn English and science and maths in English, because in the long run, it will definitely benefit them. You go into international platform, the international lingo is English. So we have to start this at a very young age. The question is on, are the teachers really having the capacity and capability to deliver DLP?
But this is the biggest problem, isn't it? Everyone is saying this is a great program, we all should do it, but there are teacher shortages happening now and the teachers are not equipped. They are not competent to teach this subject. Nee Ching, on the ground, right? How severe is this shortage?
Shortage is one issue. I think at the moment, we still lack of like a few thousands teachers in schools. But I think even putting aside shortage issue, because this is issues that I think we can't solve it for many, many decades. But putting aside this shortage issue, actually, another problem that we face in school for implementing DLP is the teachers, they are not well equipped enough to teach this subject in English. I think that is the reality that we need to deal with as well. So when we conducted the survey in the year 2019, it actually also shows that DLP, when we say DLP, it means that the teachers are supposed to teach mathematics and science in English. But eventually in the classroom, when they conduct the teaching, they usually use BM and English.
You know, Conrad, how much training is required? To be fair, I'm sure not all teachers are well conversant in English, so they do need to be brought up. The question is, how much and how much have we actually done?
That's a big question. For me, my perspective is that, you know, when they did a large recruitment of 14,000 to 18,000 teachers, 18,000, right? That was a step in the right direction, I think, so trying to fill the gaps. But my concern is finding the right teacher with the right major option to fill in the gap. For example, if it's English, what is finding the teacher that can deliver in English? So if you ask me, Philip, I really don't know how to answer that question and because English is something that cannot be learned overnight, the competence, right? It is not an overnight thing, but I think so. It has to go back to finding the people who have very strong proficiency and bringing them and guiding them, encourage them to do it, to become teachers. That's how I see it.
But that's the biggest challenge, isn't it? We are all rife with teacher shortages. I mean, you are advocating that we need to funnel and filter a bit more upfront, but it's very hard to filter when the shortage is severe, isn't it? I think that's what's happening in Malaysia. That's why there was so many debates about this contract for service teachers, right? And about the decision to just finally extend, even though there was so much controversy. So Nee Ching, your perspective, right? How do we get teachers ready for this? Because what I'm hearing from Conrad, that it's a really hard slog. It's really, really hard to get them there. But can we do it or not?
I think first of all, when we recruit teachers, of course, their major is very important. So their major will decide on what are the subjects that they are supposed to teach. But we need to understand this, except for English subject, actually, I don't think the majority of the university grads, they need to actually have at least master like C1 in CFR in English. But for an English teacher to teach in secondary school or primary school, their English substandard should be minimum C1. And for university, it should be C2. So now the question is, if we link it back to the DLP program, I recruit a mathematics teacher because he studied mathematics in school. But how good is his English? That is not the criteria that we set for them when we recruit them to become a secondary or a primary school teachers under MOE.
Yeah.
So the question, when we talk about DLP, actually one of the criteria is, there are a few criteria. First of all, parents request for it. Secondly, the students who want to enroll into the program must show that their BM is better than average standard. And then thirdly, the schools, they are ready for it. So it means that actually if the teachers feel that they are not ready, then the school actually don't have an obligation to provide DLP courses in the school. And that is the reality we face, because the request, I think, from the parents a lot, but not all the schools nearby them will provide this type of program.
So the worry now about execution has been the fact that many schools have overpromised and underdelivered. Due to a lot of pressure from parents, they just had succumbed to the pressure, say, yeah, we do it, but actually in reality, they couldn't do it. They didn't have the gumption to say no.
Yep. So I think that is very important. And therefore, when we provide, start doing the DLP, implementing in DLP program in certain schools, how do we assess the English standard of the teachers? And do we provide them courses? Because yes, we do have these type of courses designed for teachers, because we are also trying to make sure that all the English teachers having at least C1 set in their English standard. And therefore, we can use this type of program actually for the DLP programs teachers. But of course, for them to enroll into these type of programs, not many teachers might be keen to do so, because that would mean that they need to take out more of their free time, personal time, to attend these type of courses, whether physically or online. And then how do we incentivize the teachers for them to actually continue to improve themselves is of course an issue, that an aspect that MOE should address.
What's your perspective, Conrad, in getting teachers to embrace new skills, new language skills, new approaches, right? In your years of managing trust schools, how does it work to get teachers to transition and embrace new ways of learning, new ways of teaching?
There's always two camps in this, Philip. I've seen there's always some teachers who are really, really keen to learn new things. They jump on board immediately. And the reason is because they see the value of what we are trying to achieve, right? And there's another camp who are always going to push back for it because they say this is going to be beban kerja, the terminology that's always used, right? More work for them. Why should I learn? Like Nichin said, I have to spend my time, more time to learn new things and all that. But the thing, what we start up front is always the engagement process, where we say this is the end in mind that we're trying to achieve. Now, to go there, if we agree to go there, this is the kind of upskilling that everyone needs to be get on board with and agree to move towards. And that's the kind of alignment that we do up front. So there is, when the funny thing, the strangest thing is that sometimes the people who resisted initially becomes the most
champions.
The champion. And we've seen many cases, and not just for English courses or just generally across the board, these teachers who were initially against the program become the most champions and ambassadors of the program because it was a process of taking through that journey, and they see the value and the impact. Because once the teachers start to see the impact, the changes in the child, immediately it reinforces the need to do more and do better. So it's always getting them to take that first step and then guiding them and nudging them along. We always nudge them, we never force them, nudge, and then they will get on board, and then you will see them fly. So that's the process that we go through.
What kind of programs do you think the government should do to rectify the preparedness of teachers? And are there any short-term solutions that, you know, the government can put in place to help address the gaps that we anticipate will take place when DLP is really fully implemented this year?
I think first of all, we need to make sure that the English courses is readily available for all the teachers involved. I think that is very important. Even just for the English teachers, I think when we want to assess their English standard, there are also certain teachers who doesn't profess like C1 for their English. And therefore, for other subjects, have we conducted any survey to actually find out their current English standard to ensure that they are actually ready for it? I think this is something we must first find out before we become over ambitious. But of course, I think continue to upskilling our teachers is very important. For all the teachers, actually, they have this continuous development program that they need to attend as well. So for this program, perhaps we make it compulsory for the teachers whose English standard is not good enough to actually take how many credit hours of English program to actually continue to enhance their English standard.
Obviously, the upskilling of the language, the command of the language is important for the teachers. Having programs for them is good. The other thing that it's really equally important is the ability for the teacher to assess the learning of the child and to differentiate the lesson for the child. I think that's a really important skill set that these teachers need to have, and it can apply across the board for anything else, not just for DLP. Because once the teacher, if the teacher is good in terms of the command of language and the delivery of the class, but if they're unable to assess the student's learning and unable to differentiate the kind of lesson is appropriate for the child, it's not going to be that effective still. So for me, the two skill sets I always see is very important that we see across all our schools is the ability to differentiate and the assessment for learning. That's the two skill sets that we are really trying to push down to the teachers. If every teacher can and able to do it effectively, then they're able to deliver the right kind of lesson for the child to change and learn.
Nichin Conrad, we've only talked about two topics, exams and dual language program, but we have so much to cover, and I really hope both of you will join us again for more conversations on how we can transform our education system. But that's all the time we have for today on The Breakfast Grill. YB Teo Nichin, former Deputy Minister of Education, and Conrad Fernandez, Executive Director of LEEBED, as we have a policy discussion on Malaysia's education system. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.